Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I'm glad, really pleased that they will have another tool to serve the public.
The Anchorage Police Department plans to carry the overdose-reversing drug Narcan. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, state health officials are bracing for an early wave of flu cases.
We're seeing very high rates of increase of influenza-like activity in the nation, and it's occurring much earlier than it has in recent years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Alaska's 2 U.S. senators voted today in favor of ending debate on a bill to protect same-sex and interracial marriage rights, advancing the bill toward final passage. The Alaska Beacon reports Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan joined 10 other Republicans and all 50 Democrats on a vote needed to end debate. Final passage is highly likely. If signed into law, the bill would not have a significant immediate effect. Same-sex marriage rights were guaranteed by the U.S. Supreme Court in a 2015 decision. But earlier this year, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas wrote that the court should re-examine that decision. If the bill becomes law and the Supreme Court reverses its 2015 decision, states would be allowed to choose whether to ban same-sex marriage, but they would be required to recognize same-sex marriages from other states and those performed in their states when the practice was legal. In Alaska, the state constitution still contains an amendment prohibiting same-sex marriage. That amendment has been legally suspended since 2014, but could be reactivated if the Supreme Court reverses itself. To garner enough votes from Republicans for the Senate bill, supporters added provisions that say religious organizations are not required to host, accommodate, or participate in same-sex wedding ceremonies. A spokesperson for Senator Sullivan said that component was the result of research by Sullivan's staff and others, and its inclusion was key. In a written statement, Sullivan said that he continues to believe the bill is unnecessary because of the Supreme Court's 2015 decision, but he believes the religion-related provisions are worth supporting. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski has pulled nearly even with Republican challenger Kelly Chewbacca in her bid for re-election. After an update from the Alaska Division of Elections yesterday, Murkowski is now behind by just 565 votes. Both she and Chewbacca now have just over 43% of those first-choice votes. A spokesperson for Murkowski's campaign said today that they expected absentee votes to favor the incumbent. They said they expect her share of the vote to continue growing as more ballots are counted. Murkowski is projected to surge ahead once Democrat Pat Chesbro is eliminated and her 24,000 ballots transfer to the voter's second choice. That ranked choice tabulation is set for November 23rd. That's a week from today. In the governor's race, incumbent Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy is holding on to his sizable lead. The Division of Elections counted an additional 27,000 ballots yesterday. Dunleavy's share dropped 1 point from 52% to 51%. If Dunleavy continues to carry over half the vote, he will win a second term outright. Analysts say they think it's likely he has won. And Dunleavy's Democratic opponent, Les Guerra, agrees.
Truthfully, as much as I'd like to fix this education crisis and appoint judges who'll respect our pro-choice case law to protect a woman's right to choose, it doesn't look likely we're going to pick up the points that we need to change the outcome at this point.
Guerra follows Dunleavy in the vote count with nearly 24%. Independent Bill Walker has about 20%, and Republican Charlie Pierce has less than 5%. Dunleavy campaign spokesperson Andrew Jensen wrote in a text Tuesday evening that the governor's team is pleased with the results so far and looks forward to building on the last 4 years. Congresswoman Mary Peltola, a Democrat, still has a lead over Republican rival Sarah Palin, with Republican Nick Begich in third place in the race for U.S. House. The Division of Elections is still counting absentee and overseas ballots. The deadline to receive them is November 18th. The division's target date to certify the election is November 29th. Anchorage police officials say they're finalizing a policy for officers to begin carrying the opioid-reversing drug naloxone, commonly known by the brand name Narcan. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the decision follows growing demands from residents who want to curb a rising number of overdoses in Alaska.
The plan for Anchorage police to start carrying Narcan was not announced to the public, but in an email Wednesday, APD spokeswoman Renee Oystead confirmed that the department hopes to implement the policy by early next year. Oystead wrote, quote, "The policy is being edited and finalized. Once that has occurred, officers will be trained on both the policy and the application of Narcan," unquote. It's welcome news for advocates like Sandy Snodgrass, who've long pushed for the use of Narcan by the city's police force.
I'm glad, really pleased, that they will have another tool to serve the public with having naloxone available.
Snodgrass's son Bruce died from a fentanyl overdose last October. Across Alaska, opioid-related deaths have skyrocketed in recent years, with state data showing a 70% increase in those deaths from 2020 to 2021. About three-quarters of the deaths involve the synthetic opioid fentanyl. Narcan, which often comes as a nasal spray, can quickly reverse an opioid overdose, and many advocates tout it as a tool to help fight the sharp rise in those deaths. But the Anchorage Police Department has been slow in adopting Narcan. It's among the last major law enforcement agencies in Alaska that doesn't have officers carrying the reversal drug. Alaska State Troopers, the Wasilla Police Department, and Village Public Safety Officers are among agencies that have already trained their officers to use it. Snodgrass held a rally in August in front of the Anchorage Police headquarters to push for officers to carry Narcan, even handing out kits to officers as they walked in and out of the building. She said use of the reversal drug will not only be beneficial to the public, but to officers as well.
There have been incidents in the country where police officers have been poisoned by fentanyl and needed to be revived by their fellow officers on the scene. And so I'm glad that Anchorage police officers will be safer.
Snodgrass said while she's grateful for the impending Narcan policy, she's also frustrated it has taken so long. A day after Snodgrass's August rally, Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl had expressed interest in revising the department's longstanding policy, which had fire department medics carrying Narcan instead of police officers. In an email, Oystad, the APD spokeswoman, said the medical advisor with the fire department, whom the police are also coordinating with, had, quote, changed his opinion on whether officers should carry Narcan. She says the Anchorage Police Union also gave input to help shape the proposed Narcan policy. Union President Jeremy Conkling says he welcomes the policy.
You know, any tools that our officers can get that'll help us better serve the citizens of Anchorage, we certainly support that. And, you know, if this saves one life, it's worth it, right?
Conkling says he hasn't heard any pushback from officers about the impending change. Anchorage police officials declined an interview request Wednesday on the policy specifics and timelines, saying the policy has not been finalized yet. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Coming up, Anchorage school district leaders suggest a push for state education funding.
Every letter that you sent to us, every word that you were planning or are planning to say tonight, send it to our legislators.
That's ahead on Alaska News Nightly. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, offers rich, thoughtful, and internationally recognized programs for students from around the world. A variety of boarding options are available year-round. There's a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
State health officials are urging Alaskans to get flu vaccines and take other protective measures as case counts increase rapidly across the country. States in the southern half of the lower 48 have the most flu cases right now. But in a public health presentation today, state epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin says the wave is expected to reach Alaska in the coming weeks.
We're seeing very high rates of increase of influenza-like activity in the nation, and it's occurring much earlier than it has in recent years.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is also spreading. McLaughlin says elderly people and young children, especially premature babies and those with chronic respiratory illnesses, are particularly vulnerable.
Most people who get an RSV infection will have mild illness and will recover within 1 to 2 weeks, but some people do get very sick and require hospitalization.
There's no vaccine for RSV, but a monoclonal antibody treatment is available for at-risk patients. Both RSV and the flu are already straining regional hospital systems. Flu-related hospitalizations among children are currently at levels not usually seen until late December and early January, according to data from the CDC. Health officials say having less capacity in children's hospitals would impact the availability of emergency medical treatment, like for injuries, as an example. The state's clinical pharmacist, Coleman Cutchins, said the situation mirrors COVID.
You know, with COVID, we really worried about adults. You know, fortunately, it didn't hit kids all that hard. So we worried about, you know, adult hospitals being overwhelmed, adult ICUs. But now when we're talking about RSV and flu, you know, yeah, they affect adults, but it's a lot more worried about kids.
Health officials stressed the importance of getting kids vaccinated against the flu and COVID. Annual flu vaccines are available for kids 6 months and older, and according to health officials, it's not too late to get one this year. A salmon hatchery operator in Prince William Sound has agreed to pay a $1 million fine for hazardous waste violations. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation pleaded guilty to illegally burning fuel and waste at its hatcheries, which led to a worker being seriously injured. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
Alaska has 25 private nonprofit salmon hatcheries in the state, most of which are in southeast Alaska. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation operates 5 of them in remote locations, 3 of which are state-owned. The hatcheries collect salmon eggs from indigenous DNA lines, fertilize and incubate them indoors, rear them outdoors in pens until they're big enough to be released into nearby waterways. What led the U.S. government charging the regional hatchery operator and the $1 million fine was years of illegally disposing of hazardous waste. The 18-page plea agreement filed November 9th focuses mainly on the Cannery Creek Hatchery, located in a remote inlet approximately 40 miles east of Whittier. Cannery Creek Hatchery violated federal environmental laws on several occasions spanning nearly a decade, according to the plea agreement. In 2013, there was a 400-gallon diesel spill, which resulted in the state suing the corporation and a few hatchery employees. That resulted in a $55,000 fine from state environmental monitors. The operator was also required to hire a consulting firm to create an environmental compliance plan for all 5 of its hatcheries. The consulting firm noted that the Cannery Creek Hatchery had no formal waste management plan. It was storing new and used oil products in various locations without appropriate containment, and it was burning solid waste in an open pit. 5 years later, in 2018, one of the hatchery's workers was seriously injured while tending to a burning drum with leftover jet fuel in it. He was medevaced out for care. Later, when the Federal Environmental Protection Agency investigated the site, the agency found that the hatchery was still burning drums of fuel. Other hatcheries were mentioned in the plea agreement, which states, the disposal of drums containing used oil was a long-standing issue at the hatcheries. The Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation eventually hired a contractor to remove several tons of hazardous waste from its hatcheries, according to the plea agreement. In addition to the $1 million fine, the corporation has agreed to 5 years of probation, during which time they'll follow an environmental compliance plan. Jeffrey Robinson, an attorney who is representing the hatcheries, said he could not comment on the case until it concludes. A spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office said the sentencing is expected in about 3 months, but declined further comment. The salmon produced in the Prince William Sound hatcheries make up about 45% of the harvest value in the region, or about $50 million a year. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Anchorage School District is considering moving all 6th grade students to middle school. It's one of several ways the district could cut costs as it faces a major budget deficit next school year. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports on the potential benefits for kids and the drawbacks for teachers.
3 out of 10 middle schools in the district are currently 6th through 8th grade. According to a plan proposed by administrators, the other 7 schools would gain 6th grade classes over the next 2 years. The school board expressed support for the plan at a work session Tuesday afternoon, but still needs to vote to approve the change. Kirsten Johnson is the senior director of secondary education in the district. She says the move would allow the district to use large middle school buildings more efficiently.
Our middle schools are some of our most empty schools in the district, minus a few neighborhood elementary schools.
Other cost savings could come from eliminating a collaborative period for teachers. Currently, middle school teachers teach for 5 out of 7 periods each day. One non-teaching period is a planning period. The other gives teachers time to work as a group. Corey Aist is president of the teachers' union. He says losing that collaborative period could negatively impact both students and teachers. For students, it means another class added to their workload. For teachers, it means less time to work together on addressing middle schoolers' needs.
Well, now they have 6 classes, so they have a whole nother set of tests, potentially, and homework. In addition, those classes are now shorter, so I'm spending less time every day with those students.
Johnson says she knows the collaborative period is valuable for teachers, but restructuring the day could help save the district money.
If you have teachers teaching more classes in a day, then essentially you can get more kids in front of them. So it means that you have an extra class period that you don't have to hire another teacher for.
For kids, Johnson says, moving 6th grade to middle school has several benefits. Middle school students have music and PE every day. 6th graders at middle schools can also take higher level math classes. Johnson says this is an opportunity to make the middle school experience consistent across the district.
I think sometimes there's like, well, my kid's in 6th grade and they're not getting this because they're at one school, or this, there's jealousy kinds of things that happen between the elementary versus secondary model. And if we can kind of give an equitable opportunity to all of our kids, that's what I'm really excited about.
At its regular meeting Tuesday night, the board announced that administrators were no longer recommending eliminating language immersion programs. More than 100 people had signed up to speak at the school board meeting, many in opposition to cutting language programs. School board president Margot Bellamy encouraged them to contact state legislators about the need for education funding.
Every letter that you sent to us, every word that you were planning or are planning to say tonight, send it to our legislators.
The school board will continue to discuss the budget through the end of the year. The board must submit a balanced budget in February. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Three cruise ships that visited Southeast Alaska this summer received awards for reporting whale sightings as part of a federal program. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration recognized the top 3 contributors to the effort: the Norwegian Encore, the Cunard ship Queen Elizabeth, and Holland America's New Amsterdam. More than 900 whale sightings were reported by Alaska Cruise Lines this year. The Encore was responsible for nearly a third of them. The Norwegian Cruise Line vessel reported almost 300 sightings. The Queen Elizabeth submitted just shy of 200, and the New Amsterdam reported 76. The reports were all made through the Whale Alert Alaska program. It's an app that launched in 2012 to help ships avoid whale strikes. NOAA and Glacier Bay National Park expanded it for use in Southeast Alaska in 2016. Carly Lowe is one of the NOAA biologists running the program.
We have sort of a live map that shows where all the whales are, and that way people can, you know, look at the map before they take off to see, you know, what the sightings were around their area, and hopefully try to avoid some of the whales in the area that they're, you know, going through.
The app replaces a previous program where cruise line agencies of Alaska would send out maps of recent whale sightings once a week through email.
So we're trying to just, you know, really make it as easy as possible for people to use, and that way it's not burdensome and it's just seamless into their other programs.
Lowe says this was the first year that NOAA gave out awards for the most reports to come from a vessel.
We're hoping to continue with that program with just some friendly competition.
The Encore's first navigation officer also received an award for his specific reports, as did a lookout on board the Queen Elizabeth. The city of Seward is again trying to sell its city-owned electric utility to Homer Electric Association. Seward voters will decide in May whether to combine the utilities into a Kenai Peninsula-wide electric cooperative under what's currently estimated to be a $25 million sale. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Representatives from Seward say they're unable to talk about the deal now, since that could influence a vote. But in a presentation, Seward Electric General Manager Rob Montgomery said working under a larger utility would give Seward the resources to afford much-needed upgrades to infrastructure, including improvements to transmission lines and cybersecurity. Those are upgrades the city can't currently afford to make on its own without raising rates for its 2,900 ratepayers. On the other hand, larger utilities can spread those expenses over many customers. Homer Electric, for example, has more than 25,000 members in its network. The city has tried before to sell its utility. A sale came before voters in 2000, but failed by just 61 votes, according to the Alaska Journal. In 2002, a deal failed again, this time because the Seward City Council voted down an $18 million offer from HEA. Earlier this year, the city started that process again. In an executive session, it considered applications both from Homer Electric and Chugach Electric, the utility for Anchorage and the northern parts of the Kenai Peninsula. Seward ultimately gave the nod to HEA. And in a letter to the city council, Montgomery says they chose HEA for several reasons, including its advanced cybersecurity technology, its promise to include Seward representation on the utility's board, and HEA's commitment to freezing consumer rates in the short term. As it stands, Seward's rates are comparable to those of HEA, but Montgomery says if voters don't approve the sale, Seward Electric would have to consider rate increases of 10% or more. One downside of the sale for Seward is that it would lose the revenue that comes from running its utility in-house. That was about $2 million in 2021. And the utility would likely get a new name. In its proposal, HEA suggests combining the utility systems into an entity called Kenai Peninsula Energy Cooperative Incorporated. HEA points out in the letter that ratepayers from both entities will benefit from the economies of scale in a combined system. And it also says it would add a representative to the utility's 9-member board to represent the Seward area. Seward City voters will decide in May whether to approve the sale. It will require a 3/5 majority to pass from city residents. Ratepayers who live outside of city limits will not get to vote. Then the deal will require an approval from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
On Saturday, dozens of people gathered in Juneau to remember Saul Neely at a Fire Dish Memorial, a Thlinget cultural ceremony. Neely taught English literature and was a community advocate for criminal justice reform through programs like the Flying University, a higher education program inside Lemon Creek Correctional Center. He died in October on a backpacking trip in Washington State where he was living. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Saul Neely used to give lectures around a fire at an outdoor pavilion on the campus of the University of Alaska Southeast, even on cold and wet November days. His memorial was held at that same spot. Alaska Native Languages professor Hune Lance Twitchell was a close friend of Neely's. He led the fire dish ceremony, which serves as a way to give those who recently died food and messages of strength to prepare them for their long journey after death. The offerings are passed through a fire.
For our guests that are here that we share love with and courage,
Sometimes we offer abbreviated versions of our cultural ceremonies with them. The ways that we grieve, the ways that we move on as Tlingit peoples. So we thought we'd offer a fire dish.
Twitchell invited those in attendance to write names of anyone else they would like to honor on note cards to be added to the fire.
Because we're inviting them to come, the things that we offer to our ancestors, we give to the fire.
Neely was a professor at UAS for more than a decade. Even though he left Juneau in 2020, there was still a large group of people at UAS and throughout the community who wanted to gather and celebrate his life here. Fellow educators and former students say Neely always approached his work with love for people and for place. Laura Hale's trip read a poem on behalf of a former Flying University student named Nathan Block.
His spirit now resides within the threshold of the book, as he would remind us. Mark the first page of the book with a red pen because, in the very beginning, the wound was invisible. With every new or old book, rub it until it bleeds. Rub it until the goosebumps on your neck scream. That's where you'll encounter Saul, hidden within the pages, awaiting your arrival.
Ida Heather Burge was a student of Neely's, who now teaches Tlingit classes at UAS.
He started reconnecting with his own Indigenous family, identity, understanding, around the same time I did. And he was an incredible example for what that looked like as an adult, to build that community, to build those places, to build those relationships with people, both where you were transplanted and where you came from.
Burge asked all of his former students to stand with her, and a dozen or so rose.
I'm not quite sure what we're going to do now that he's gone. Atlingitchew Saul, for everything you've given us. You've laid a foundation. We're going to keep building on it. Cheesh.
Will Geiger said it was fitting that Neely's memorial was held at the Noyes Pavilion, where he attended each class of Saul Neely's post-colonial literature course, even on cold November nights like this one.
I've been thinking lately that Saul often talked about how, based off something Cornel West said, he considered time to be a gift and a giver rather than a limitation placed on what we're able to accomplish. And so I've been thinking about what a gift we all received having Saul here with us rather than a impediment it is that he left us sooner than we would have wanted him to.
Many people talked about how much Neely loved his daughter. Neely's wife and daughter were at the ceremony, but neither spoke. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.